You are listening to episode number 175 of the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast. After our Guardians of the Galaxy special of a little movie you may or may not have heard of last week, we are officially back to our old school numbering. We are back, in case this is your first episode. I am the marvelous Iggy, a.k.a. Ben, from the great state of Texas. Joining me, the man whose team just traded away one of their best players, from the Boston Red Sox to the Oakland A's, Mr. Brian Powers. Brian, welcome back. Your Red Sox are terrible.
Oh, we are not smart people trade-wise. Oh, God.
Missing Theo Epstein now, aren't you?
Well, I miss Francona, if that counts for anything.
He got fired unjustly. I say that much. I'm like, he did not
deserve to get fired. Oh, of course he did, because he couldn't keep up with the whole winning thing that everyone loves so much. So their solutions bring in Bobby Valentine, which is a big fuck you to everybody.
Well, the new guy's not bad, but, you know, he had one good year so far. But whatever.
But five guys, and you trade away? I can't even talk about it right now.
And, of course, joining us just from down the street, down the couple of states from Brian, from the city of New York, the city that never sleeps, Mr. Taser. Taser, welcome to the show.
I just have this one thing to say, and it's for John. Henson! Okay, there you go. I got my geek on.
There you go. Okay. Okay, I know I started off really high octane, but we're going to get serious for a few minutes. At the time of this recording, and if you're listening to this by the time this is posted, it has just been revealed to the world that actor Robin Williams was found dead through suicide, asphyxiation. And if you are either any of us, you have watched something Robin Williams was in, and you knew how much of a talent he had. So basically, we just want to take a moment of silence for unfortunately letting his demons winning, unfortunately. So this is that. We'll miss you, Robin. You are a tremendous talent. And before I pass it on these guys to say a few things about Robin Williams, and you're probably hearing this message everywhere, but I feel inclined to say it considering I kind of went through the same thing. If you're ever feeling that point, that low, low point, don't feel ashamed. Don't feel like you're weak. Talk to somebody. There's always somebody, like friends, family, or the suicide prevention hotline. Never feel like you're alone. So, Taser, obviously you're the oldest of us. You saw Robin Williams probably when he was in his younger career, and of course up until recently. You have any thoughts to say about this giant? I believe this giant that we have lost.
I'm saddened by his departure from our world. I'm still kind of dumbstruck at his loss and how it's happened. I'm trying to imagine, you know, what could have, you know, brought him to end things this way, you know, after having had such a storied and interesting life. You know, wow, there's just no words for that. My condolences go out to him and his family, and I'd like to reiterate what you just said about suicide. The gift of life is the best present that anybody could have, and if you're ever at that point when you don't know what to do and exiting seems like your only and or best option, find somebody and talk to them. Really. Because regardless of where you are religiously, you know, regardless of where you are spiritually, because they're not the same thing, seriously, don't toss it away like that. Find somebody, anybody, and talk. That's all I got.
Brian?
Well, I guess my first exposure to Robin Williams was, as many things in my life were exposed to me through my father. He was always kind of a fan, never really diehard, and sort of kind of, you know, Robin Williams became something of a less prolific actor, I think, in his later years, if not for lack of trying, but that's neither here nor there. I first saw Robin Williams, I believe, was in Aladdin, where he was the voice of the genie. I was one of many children raised on Disney movies, as it happened. And I remember the genie being the most lively, comical part of that, and that was one of my favorite characters growing up as a kid. And then I saw him, of course, in other films as I got older. I saw him in Mrs. Doubtfire, I believe was the first film where I actually saw him on screen, you know, that was a voice work. My father, when I was old enough, showed me Good Morning Vietnam, which is a movie that he actually very much likes. Saw Good Will Hunting because Matt Damon and Ben Affleck were in it, and I had to, by obligation, see that movie. And I've seen a bit of the Mork character, not from Mork and Mindy, but from Happy Days. And I guess there's nothing really that sticks out more to me in his body of work than the charity work he did, especially for the Dana-Farber Foundation. He was on all those commercials, and I always saw them. And I always remembered myself thinking, this is a guy who not only has just this monumental comedy career behind him, but he's not just sticking to himself. He's putting himself out there in a way that not many people did. And in parlance, perhaps comic book fans will be aware of, he's using his power for good and not evil. You know, he was always trying to raise awareness for different charitable causes and stuff, and he was just a great, great guy. I can't imagine what it's going to be like without him. I remember seeing his commercials for a sitcom on CBS just last year, the one with Sarah Michelle Gellar. And the world is a lesser place with him not being here anymore. And like my friends here say, if you are ever in a place where you feel that you cannot cope or you feel alone, please don't keep to yourself. That is the worst thing you can do. Don't lock yourself away. You're only as alone as you make yourself feel. I really do believe that. So if you are ever in need of help, please talk to somebody. And it is sad that this man, who has done so much with his life, was just in a place where he just wanted out, and he didn't see another way. And I honestly hope, without passing judgment, condoning, or condemning whatever exists on that other side, I honestly hope he is in a better place where he doesn't have to feel that anymore. And so, I guess those are my last thoughts on Robin Williams.
So, yeah. You gotta rebound, gotta rebound. Okay. Robin would want the, you know, everything to happen.
Robin would want us to be happy.
Exactly. I guess I'll save my thoughts in that.
Don't worry. Be happy.
Robin Williams was not only just a great comedian, but he was also just a great actor. You know, if you like, I'll name one movie, The Dead Poets Society, which is my personal favorite of his movies. And that he at least he seemed like just a wonderful human being. And like again, I'll just reiterate, you know what they said. It's a tragedy. It's simply, for some reason, this hurts. You know, like it just doesn't feel right. You know,
deaths to me, especially celebrity deaths, always cut deeper when it's a man who, more than anything else, is a comedian who thrives on happiness and laughs and bringing joy to people. So that really, I think, hits home for this a lot more than I think just another death.
Yeah. So rest in peace, Robin, wherever you're going. Our thoughts and prayers are with you. But let's move on to some hopefully happier news that will debate some angry nerd talk and piss Taser off in some fashion. Okay, so obviously we all, except for Taser, loved Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, I loved it.
And everybody's favorite talking tree, Groot, voiced by incredible actor Vin Diesel, who should get more credit than I feel like he earns. He should be a big superstar.
Bigger if nothing than else, for his incredible loyalty to franchises that should have well ended by now.
Yes. Looking at you, Fast.
Yeah, because nothing else he's
looking
done
at you,
has worked.
I like Pitch Black.
No, Pitch Black, but Chronicles of Riddick was awful.
Oh, God, don't remind me.
Although Riddick was not bad.
No, Riddick was good.
No, Riddick was Riddick a step was up.
Riddick
but
was not
Chronicles,
bad.
But Chronicles just...
Yeah, that was...
I think that was the first movie I ever walked out on. I'm like, I'm not doing this. I left my girlfriend there at the time. Like, I'm sorry, I gotta go. I can't do this. She watched it. I'm like, okay.
God bless her soul.
Apparently, let's go to B-Roy. Apparently, Vin Diesel's been teasing something.
Yeah. Yeah, he has. Earlier, I believe it was this week, Vin Diesel posted an image of Groot on his Facebook page, and it, anticipating the fallout from the movie breaking records of being like the number one pre-order in August, I think it was, that wasn't to be, unexpected. Vin Diesel is a guy who will fly your banner if he is a part of your franchise. He will plug you no matter what. That sounded dirty.
That but, did very much so.
No matter what, he will plug you. So Vin Diesel posted an image of Groot and then posted this in the text. Vin and Marvel, ellipses. You all made it happen. I get the strange feeling that Marvel thinks I'm inhuman, capitalized I, ellipses. Ha ha. End quote. Now, Vin Diesel has always, teased fans as well, especially when people were still settling on rumors of what he was going to be in Marvel, because rumors surfaced long before he ever got a role. You know, there were Vision rumors, there were rumors about Groot flying around, and now we can add another rumor to the heap. Some people might be thinking that this alludes to Marvel bringing the Inhumans to the big screen at some point. And moreover, there is a fringe rumor on top of that saying that Vin Diesel may be tapped to play the titular king of the Inhumans, Blackagar Boltagon, a.k.a. Black Bolt. And so, yeah, I mean, Vin Diesel leading the Inhumans. That's, certainly an idea. I will say that it is an idea.
Talk.
Obviously.
Yeah, that's the awesome thing.
You keep his mouth shut.
Well, I mean, you know what, though? He would have the ability to carry his presence without saying a word.
Yeah, he would have to.
I give him that.
Yeah.
No, I think Diesel could really pull that off.
Mm-hmm.
He can actually, he can do that because he kind of did that in, like, the first, Fast and Furious movie.
Yeah.
You know, so
yeah, he didn't have a lot of talking in Fast and Furious 1.
It was the presence he had.
Right.
I think he has the worthiness to play Black Car Boltagon. That's Black Bolt's real name if you're playing at home.
Which is such a stupid name, too.
He's an inhuman. They're not people.
Hey, that's anti-mutate talk you're talking about there.
Well, look, he's a Kirby creation, so I already revere Black Bolt, so there's that.
Fair enough.
But at the same time, he's...
Hey, Kirby Dots.
His name is Black Gar Boltagon.
Kirby Dots. Kirby Dots.
Yeah. No, it's Black Gar Boltagon.
Wasn't it Boltagar?
No, I think it's one of those two.
It's Boltagon, because I remember thinking, that's a weird shape, a Boltagon.
I think to get back on point.
Is that little fork thingy on his head? Is that what that is?
You know, that thing actually used to do something. It wasn't just a hair of ceremonial headdress back in the 60s. I don't remember what. Like, he didn't have, like, the big, like, atomic, like, death scream that he has now. He used to be able to talk, which I'm like, I want to read the story where, how the fuck do we go from this to that? I'm just curious.
If you're a Marvel fan and you're listening to this. His character, because not only, it added a mystique to him and not the mystique from X-Men comics.
He's a silent king.
You can add that mystique to mine thing.
Yeah. Hey!
Jennifer Lawrence.
But it also deepened, it also,
either or, both.
It added depth to Medusa because she was the only one who could constantly understand what he was thinking without any sort of even, actions being taken or whatever.
He added depth to Medusa? Yeah.
Yeah!
But I will say that it's not a surprise considering the Fox deal. We already talked about this, that they're going to use the Inhumans. And mark my words, I guarantee you that this is their way. And I'm not saying this is a bad thing, by the way. That this is their way to get the new Miss Marvel Kamala into the cinematic universe if they're going to do the Inhumans thing.
You think they're going to go directly to Kamala, not even bother with Carol or even Monica Rambeau?
No, I mean, I think Carol will show up and then, she'll see Carol, Captain Marvel, I'm a woman, Miss Marvel. There you go.
I'm every woman.
Because apparently people love, I don't read the book, but people love Miss Marvel. So I want to read the book, I want to try it, but we'll see. But I think Vin Diesel could do it. I think it'd be cool to see Trigon and that guy and
Triton and
Medusa and
Trigon.
Is it Trigon?
Trigon? That's DC, pal. That's distinguished competition.
Look, I've been playing Injustice for the past week and a half.
Karnak.
He's the one who can see flaws.
I love how none of us can name any of the Inhumans. That's just wonderful.
Because let's face it. The Inhumans have not had a regular, a series about them in a long while.
The only one who I know off the top of my head is, off the bat that I know is Crystal, and that's because she got down on Ronan the Accuser.
What?
Yeah, they were married for a while there in the comics.
That's weird.
Because what happened was the Inhumans came back, kicked the Kree in the balls, and said, hey, we're your royalty now, so get with it. And Ronan's kind of like, he bowed to them, and then to solidify his political alliance, they married Ronan to Crystal.
Yeah, it was all politics. But started having feels, and he started feeling feels.
Oh. Yeah, buddy.
I want to read that. I want to read that.
That's the Abnett and Lanning stuff you're getting into now. That's the War of Kings, Realm of Kings. That's all that whole stuff.
Right.
I can't wait to read that whole space saga.
Yeah.
I missed a butt on that entirely.
Yeah.
But it's obviously not true yet, but I think it'd be cool to see Vin Diesel as the king of the Inhumans.
Depending on how the Paul Bettany thing shakes out come Avengers 2 Age of Ultron, this could be one of the first instances of Marvel mixing actors with multiple characters, because I don't think we've seen that yet.
No, not
to my knowledge.
Anyway. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's not like, for Groot, he doesn't have to do much. He just goes into a recording booth.
He's a very minimalist guy when it comes to Marvel. He's either saying one sentence or nothing at all.
Well, I mean, apparently, this isn't the first time, because remember, people thought he was going to be Vision for the first time.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. Vision rumors flying about him, yeah.
If it does happen, then there is an Inhumans movie, or you know what this does, and I don't mean to change the subject entirely, but the introduction to humans, this really makes me wish if Marvel would get back one property, it's Fantastic Four, and it's it feels weird to talk about the Inhumans and not talk about Fantastic Four, it just because if that relationship they've had
Not to me. I mean, maybe that's just me personally, because I've never really read a lot of stuff where they crossed over, FF notwithstanding.
Well, FF discovered them, and it's just there's that relationship that they have.
And Johnny dated Crystal for a little while, too. He was down on that, too.
It's that shared relationship, and I think that it would have been cool. And, if there's one prop, maybe the next movie will bomb so bad that they will give it up. Who knows?
It all depends on how that shakes out. I will say that Vin Diesel was never my first choice for Black Bolt, but if he does end up getting the role,
I wanted Antonio Banderas.
I would have gone with Wentworth Miller. That's just me. But yeah, I mean, that's I'm all for it, if nothing else, because Vin Diesel just seems like a nice guy. And
you know,
who's
the guy who plays James Bond?
Which one?
Daniel Craig.
Daniel Craig, yeah.
Him for Karnak.
Yeah.
Really?
Yep.
I don't mean to come off as sounding even remotely racist, but I'd cast an Asian actor as Karnak before I put Daniel Craig in the role.
Not even. You know who I would put? No
who?
Kidding. The same guy that I would put in for Iron Fist.
Ray Park?
Yeah.
Ray Park?
He's short?
No.
Short
no.
And a legit martial artist, and he can act.
True. Okay. I would love to see some. Maybe they can get another Darth Maul thing in there.
God. Now I'm going to go through my head and cast every single Inhuman. It's going to be pain.
Well,
hey,
that
should be what we do next episode.
Yeah, we'll cast the Inhumans.
Next episode is the casting couch for the Inhumans movie.
All right, so let us know what you think of in the comment section on what you think of Vin Diesel, rumored to potentially if he were to play a Black Car Baltagon, what do you think of it? And also, who would you cast as Medusa, just for funsies? And let's move on to the next topic, where we have some cock picks.
So going from an actor potentially playing a role to an actor we can see playing a role, we have the first images of Charlie Cox as Matt Murdock in the forthcoming Netflix Daredevil TV series. And he looks pretty good. I could take that as Daredevil.
He looks older here than he did in the trailer, the picture they were showing of him.
Yeah, he seems to have aged a bit, noticeably, from the publicity photos they've been handing around. But, he's even got the red portion of his walking cane, which is just...
His glasses are tinted red. He has a scar on his cheek, on his side. I wonder what that's from. Probably from fucking crime.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably from a thing where he gets hit in the head, but I was thinking at first maybe it's scarring from the new, whatever that fell into his eyes as a kid, but yeah, it could be that too.
You think that would have healed, though, over the course of so many years?
Not necessarily. Acid doesn't necessarily heal that much when exposed to your skin, you know, and I'm sure whatever it was that flew into Matt Murdock's eye.
Radioactive waste.
It's the stuff that created the Ninja Turtles.
Pretty much.
Same company too.
Exactly, pretty much.
Actually, yeah, from the Turtles comics, it was the canister. It was the lid that hit him, and the rest of it fell down into the sewer and made the Turtles.
Yeah, so the Turtles have been in Marvel continuity in the background like true ninjas. We just never seen it. So where were you when the hand was invading, assholes? Anyways.
I was fighting the Foot Clan jerk. Oh,
yeah, y'all had the hand; they handled the foot. There you go.
They never intersected at all. What are the odds? New York's a big city. Okay. So, as a Daredevil fan that I am, I think we don't have an idea what the costume looks like, do we?
Nothing on that yet. No, just publicity photos of Matt Murdock.
I think he looks great. You know, he has that sort of Matt Murdock-ness to him. In terms of that look, it's hard to see. How he's going to be without an extra trailer. I'm more curious on what the suit's going to look like and what route they go, you know?
Because, you know, say what you will about that movie, but the costume wasn't bad.
I liked it.
All things considered. You know, it could have been just him running around in the yellow.
I wish it was a brighter red, but I liked it.
Yeah, some could say that Daredevil started the darker superhero trend. But no one would, because why do you want to talk about Daredevil?
I still don't think that movie's as terrible as people make it out to
be. The director's cut's okay.
Yeah, the first movie. I fell asleep during that movie. By the way, the original director's cut. But I still think, I mean, Daredevil the movie is an example of comic homage, and the movie still sucks, or at least the theatrical cut. Because there's so many callbacks to the comics, it's not even funny. But I'm curious. Do we know? Is it taking place in the modern Marvel universe, like Guardian? Like
Avengers? I think it's meant to cross over with the MCU at certain intersection.
No. I mean, like, is it in the same time? Like, is it 2014 or whatever it's going to be?
Yeah, I think it's current day.
Okay. Yeah, MCU was based mostly in the modern day. Okay, so
because I mean, like, you know, there's so, like, with Agent Carter coming out, there's literally so much they could fill anything from 1945. To 2008, like
they could do the Invaders via Agent Carter.
Yeah, we'll see. But I'm just saying in general, like I think I misread somewhere that it was going to take place in the 70s. I'm like, ooh, But
that no, make... I think that was going off of that trailer that was pitched by the man who did the A-Team. Remember, he did a trailer together of Daredevil sort of in the 70s? I think they were riffing on that, and that's okay. Where I crossed
from. Okay.
You know, I could see that working.
Daredevil being like a 70s vigilante?
Yeah, I could kind of see that working.
I mean, actually. X-Men First Class proved that you can do timepieces with superheroes.
I won't argue that.
First Avenger proved that too, but I guess that works.
Well, X-Men First Class came out first, technically.
Well, think about this.
What?
Fuck you.
Well, X-Men First Class actually traveled through, like, what, about 75, 80 years, all things considered? We're talking it went from, like, the latter half of the 19th century well into the 20th century.
Mm-hmm.
Think about it.
Yeah. Mm. Mm-hmm. All right, so what do you guys think about Charlie Cox? Cox.
Cox.
Yeah.
We're 12.
Cox.
Oh, geez. From suicide to Cox. This is just... this is just wonderful. I dig it. You know, like I said, I don't really know anything about his acting ability. So, you know, he can look however good he wants, but without any real ability behind it, it's not going to mean much. But
you know what he looks like?
Oh, God.
He looks... What's his name? He's from Friends.
Chandler?
He looks like Chandler a little bit.
Chandler. Dude, if Chandler was Daredevil, that would be much better.
That first image of him just looking like, eh, he kind of looks like Chandler in that picture. I like Chandler, don't get me wrong, but he kind of looks like Chandler. Are we really talking? We're talking about this. This is hilarious.
So that means Janice ought to be running up really smelling stuff. I don't have a problem with this. I think it's a good look. It's not over top or anything. It looks nice and proper, and that's how Matt Murdock generally carries himself. You know, nice, clean, professional. You know, I'm fine with this. You know, this isn't a bad look. Although, I guess, you know, his hair being, you know, what it is, yeah, okay, fine. You know, even though, what's his name, is a fire crotch, yeah, I can work with this. This is not a problem.
Okay. I hope, what's her face? Mary, the freaking Typhoid Mary shows up. I hope she shows up.
I'm still hoping that, what's her name? Rosario Dawson plays her.
Oh, that she's Typhoid Mary?
Yeah, because she would be an awesome Typhoid Mary.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Maybe she is. We'll see.
Well, I mean, who else would she play?
I still
think Rosario Dawson?
Kristen Duffy, his recent
Elektra.
No, not she's not. She's not Elektra.
Would you buy her as a freaking Greek socialite, though?
Sure.
I bought Jennifer Garner as that.
Yeah, no kidding.
Well, you know, because Jennifer Garner's Caucasian, like, you know, it wasn't really hard.
She's a tanned Greek. Better.
Besides, did you see her father in that movie, played by Egyptian? What's his face?
Yeah.
What?
I don't remember his. You've seen him before. He like.
What are we?
Yeah,
talking
he's been
about?
In. He's a huge TV actor. I forget his name, but he's
the guy who played the guy who played Elektra's dad in the Daredevil movie.
I don't even remember who played Elektra's
he's
dad.
He's basically he's not. He's the furthest thing you can get. Is he? He's not white.
He was like Middle Eastern or something.
Yeah.
I think. Yeah.
Yeah. But he came out. Like,
oh,
he's
Mediterranean. Basically. Now that I could buy, but I don't buy Rosario Dawson as a Mediterranean.
I don't buy her as Elektra. Period. So, but
I'm just saying, I mean, she looks exotic, so, you know, there's that.
I'm saying she's Kristen McDuffie.
Yeah, what is it?
That's who I'm saying it is.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Well, we'll find out when the show eventually comes out. We still have a release date. We don't have a trailer. We don't have a costume.
Yeah, taking their time.
I want Deck costume. I want his costume. I honestly hope the pilot is him in the red and yellow.
That would be a nice nod.
You know,
I'll agree with that. That like, would be a nice nod.
Like with just a cane and then like what I would want ideally, and I'm not gonna get mad if the show doesn't do it, but at the end of The Man Without Fear, the Daredevil Origin story that Frank Miller did with John Romita Jr. is that Daredevil's not in it during the first like whole part of the book, and like the final page is basically him sort of jumping from a rooftop as like no costume, and then in the red and yellow, then you see him like morph and like as he progresses, his costume changes to his modern day look. I would kind of like that. Ooh. I would like that replicated on screen. Like he jumps, and like like say a year flashes forward or 6 months, and like he has the red, the like the bright red. Never, maybe not bright red.
Okay,
but
yeah, I can see that.
Think that would cool, be
bad. Although, I wouldn't mind that black outfit that he had during
the 90s.
No, the during Shadowland.
Oh, no,
I like that outfit.
Me,
I can't help.
Yeah,
it.
That outfit was that was the best thing
give
about Shadowland.
Give me my red. Give me my red. I want my red.
I'm surprised you don't want the yellow and red, Iggy. I
do. No, I do, but only as a nod. I don't want him. I don't want the, his to be his permanent costume. I mean, let's face it. When you think of classic Daredevil costume,
he has a stealth suit.
Well, he's already like ninja like. Whatever.
Well,
okay,
see, that's just kind of a joke.
So. Yeah. They're probably gonna go like you know since the Flash won't give me bright red, Daredevil might give me bright red, which probably won't work because he's supposed to be you know running in running around doing things. It'll be a muted red if anything.
One question though, this is Netflix, so does that mean that they're going to shoot all 13 or so episodes and then just put them all out at once? Or
I think that's how it works. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, cool. All right then. Shoot.
So if you're on Netflix, you can just binge watch it right then and there, and not have to wait week to week to get the episodes. Which is kind of
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, I can do this while I'm waiting for Orange is the New Black Season 3 to start up.
All right. So let's move on. Or, Brian, do you have anything else to say? Because I think I might have skipped you.
No, you. I covered myself. So,
all right.
You know.
So we apparently, of course, we already know about Sony's plans with Spider-Man.
Spider-Man.
Brian, what's their latest tactic?
Yeah. So... in an announcement that came only 2 weeks after Marvel announced Thor's gender swap, Sony announced that they would be heading up a movie in the Spider-Man franchise that would have a female lead. Now, they didn't say anything more than this, but they assured us that it was going to happen. Well, who could it be, this female lead in this upcoming franchise movie? Well... some of the leading contenders include Spider-Woman, perhaps, a.k.a. Charlotte Witter, fashion designer genetically modified by Doc Ock, Silver Sable, a mercenary slash thief slash enforcer who works for the Kingpin once, if I'm not mistaken. Is that right?
I don't remember that, actually. Well, no, I think
she's
that was Spectacular Spider-Man, the TV show. I think the
that's my subconscious because that show was awesome. Also possible is the Black Cat, who was introduced in Amazing Spider-Man 2 as Felicia, Harry Osborn's sister, who was played by Felicity Jones. Although
wait, really?
It wasn't legitimized as being Felicia Hardy.
Okay.
But it's pretty heavily alluded. Given
when you name a woman Felicia
in a Spider-Man movie,
you're
kind
of
like,
asking, "Go, huh?" Yeah.
But wait a minute, that was supposed to be his sister?
Assistant.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah,
all right.
Sorry.
Listen, old man.
I slurred my words there for a second.
Yeah, because you're from Boston.
Yeah. And also a fringe runner-up, Stunner, I guess, who I've never heard of. Apparently she was a video store clerk who ended up, quote-unquote, getting a makeover from Dr. Octopus to make her a powerful evil foe of Spider-Man and so on and so forth. And so... yeah, Spider-Man getting a female-led movie. Thoughts?
Spider-Woman.
Nah, what? It's too obvious.
Come on. Yeah. I would love it to be. I don't
too,
know if...
too
they...
easy.
Okay,
unless you're
sure?
going Ultimate Spider-Woman, it's too damn obvious.
Sure. That doesn't mean I don't want to see Jessica Drew and that fabulous ass on the big screen.
Plus, actually, I don't know if she's covered under the whole.
Look, she's a spider. She's covered. Okay.
Yeah, but she has virtually no ties to the Spider-Man world.
She kissed him once. That's
what?
Connection enough. I'm pretty sure they must have kissed. Maybe that was DNA. I don't.
Oh, you don't even know.
Look,
you don't even.
It's 50 years of comics. I don't. Well, ask Arnold. He's in the process of reading them all. So. I want it to – look, if it can't, I want it to be Jessica Drew's Spider-Woman. I think it'd be cool. And she doesn't have the exact same power. She doesn't have the same power set as Spider-Man, and she has a completely different origin. Well, never mind. Parents who disappeared and turned her over to Hydra. Yeah. Well, they can't use Hydra. That'd be the terrible thing is that her backstory as a Hydra agent could not be used at all.
That's why I'm saying the Ultimate would be the way to go, given that she was just a clone of Peter in that world.
Do we know? Well, yeah. They've already introduced the idea of clones, haven't they?
Yeah, well...
Or like the guy who makes them?
Yeah, I think they covered that.
Okay, so... If I can't have my Jessica Drew, as I cough my way through this, if I can't have my Jessica Drew Spider-Woman, I'll take Black Cat. I think she could be interesting and be fun to see her prowl around. I mean, let's face it, guys. If we get a Black Cat movie, it's basically going to be like Catwoman. Not that Halle Berry movie, but like that's going to people are going to be calling it. People are going to be like, hey, it's Catwoman. It's Catwoman.
Yeah.
She wears a black suit
no,
and she steals things and she fucks the main hero.
I don't know. People were claiming for a Black Cat appearance in a Spider-Man movie as far back as Spider-Man 2.
True, but I'm just saying,
hell, the video game for that movie featured a Black Cat pretty heavily and everyone was like, oh, they need to put her in the movie next.
I'm just saying.
Wasn't Rachel McAdams rumored for that role for a little while there?
I can't her as Felicia Hardy.
Rachel McAdams?
No, I can't.
Yeah. Well, you know what it is, too?
She's too nice.
Nice. Knock on wood.
Yeah. Somebody with Black Cat, the girl needs to be, she needs to be able to have, like, an attitude about her. Like, she's carrying a chip on her shoulder because of what she, I don't fucking know. She needs to be able to look like she handles her own and won't take shit from anybody who gets in her way of her whatever she's stealing. I wonder if they'll give her luck powers.
The luck powers. She actually has luck powers. That's how she
gets out of
she
everything.
Gained luck powers
that's
along with
that's Domino's domain.
Which makes me wonder every time I see Spider-Man punch her, I'm like, couldn't she have dodged that with her luck powers? Oh, whatever.
I don't think she can control it. That's
oh, it just happens.
Thing. Yeah.
I think that'd be fun to have though.
It can also work against her too. That's the other
thing.
Yeah,
which would bring in the drama.
I'd rather have like Longshot's ability. You know, he actually can kind of tap into.
Yeah, but Longshot's a weird character because he's not a mutant. He's a whatever. We're not talking about Longshot. Aranya, you know, I guess, but I don't know if they want to introduce
her.
She's
not popular enough. Granted, yeah. we are playing to a mostly Latino audience here in the U.S., but they, even still.
Yeah, I mean, Black Cat makes, not Madame Web. You're not going to do that movie. That's going to be more.
Actually, I wouldn't mind putting Madame Web inside of a Spider-Man movie.
But not as a lead, though.
Oh, no, not as a lead. Not at all.
I think it should be cool to see, but I don't think they'll do it because of the direction they've gone with the movie. She's just a little too out there for them. I would love to see it, but I don't think they will do it.
No, actually, you know what I would do? I would put Madame Web in there as a small part in the beginning, warning Spider-Man about stuff coming down. He ends up meeting Felicia Hardy, who's there not so much to do her, you know, typical B&E stuff, but she's there to round up the Black Fox, who's working for Silvermane. And I would do Silvermane exactly like he was done in the comics. Not just the old guy, but the old guy who's been turned into a cyborg.
Oh, that. So you mean we don't get to see him losing
power? Hey, wait a second. Wasn't that in The Wolverine?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was.
Oh my God, we've already seen Silvermane on the big screen.
Silvermane was the Silver Samurai, ladies and gentlemen.
That, for all you, that's the Marvel-Sony, that's the Fox-Sony connection, people.
Yeah.
There you go.
Silvermane in the comic, and we're talking with Spider-Man, much
He was just a type. Dude. He was just a gangster until he became a cyborg.
Yeah. But he was also a pretty decent cyborg, you know.
No, I know that, but I think, you know, considering how they handle the cyborgs with Rhino, I'm not confident about how they do it with Silvermane.
Yeah, but you'd also get to include like the cops again.
Oh, true. Yeah.
You know, it plays out a lot different, you know, in that manner. That's why I would do that. Also, you know, you could also toss in Hammerhead.
Hammerhead would be cool. Or Tombstone. Tombstone would be cool. I'd like to
see Idris Elba as Tombstone.
Idris Elba could play Tombstone.
Yeah.
I don't know that. But if you have Tombstone, then you either got to drop...
Especially an albino Stringer Bell in your own set.
But you'd either have to drop Silvermane or Hammerhead because this like just
well
too
then
many
drop
gangs.
Hammerhead and just have like a gang war between.
It's like a gangland movie.
Yeah, have it be gang centered.
Gangs of New York meets Spider-Man.
Exactly, and Spider-Man's stuck in the middle. I think that'd be interesting to see.
Ooh, Daniel Day-Lewis for Hammerhead. Yes.
No, he's too big for Hammerhead.
Really?
Yes. If for nothing else than to see him try and twist in the wind and try to understand a character that is Hammerhead.
What's there to understand?
He's an Academy Award-winning actor, and he's reduced to playing Hammerhead.
Well, that's why he won't play Hammerhead.
He'll be the first one to have to do something like that.
That's true.
Halle Berry.
Well, let's be fair.
There's a lot of blame for that going around. So.
This is why we can't have a Black Cat movie because of Halle Berry. Oh, well, okay, so are we all in agreement that Black Cat would be the most logical pick?
Obviously, but that doesn't mean the way they're going to go, but probably.
I want Spider-Woman, Jessica Drew. I want it. Make it happen. Somebody make that movie.
Well, hold on. Aside from Black Cat and, okay, Jessica Drew because, you know, Iggy wants it.
There's
Jessica Drew was never mentioned in the short list.
There's Arkine or something. There's Ark something. She's the current Madame Web. Yeah, she was the current.
That's Charlotte Witter, Spider Woman character.
Yeah, thing. She could. I mean, they could use her.
She was the Spider Woman of Omega Flight in Canada.
No, wasn't that the Spider Woman that he met during Secret Wars?
Yes. No. I don't remember.
Yeah. Because she was the one with the black and white outfit.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's he ended up when he got the symbiote, he ended up making his outfit look like hers.
Well, it just looked like that, actually.
But let's eliminate spider-oriented motif females. What female would you put in the – well, does he have anybody else that's not spider-oriented aside from, like, Mary Black Jane. Cat and Silver Sable?
Mary Jane.
Well,
we're talking about as a protagonist.
Village. What about that police lady? What's her face?
Jean DeWolf?
No, she's a cop. Yeah. She shouldn't be made a hero. She's a cop.
What about Jesus?
If anything.
Nah. Well, her death was pretty well done.
Depends on who you ask.
God, what's her name? Who is his
Liz
girlfriend?
Allen?
Thank you. That was it.
No, but her brother's the Molten Man.
Yeah, but she was a vigilante for all 5 minutes.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
really, when?
Back when. I forget exactly what she was
called.
You're
making shit up now.
I'll find you the article, okay? Just give me a second, all right?
What about what was her name again? Jackpot.
But that's weird because that's basically gonna, if they're gonna do like they did in the comics where it makes the audience think it's MJ, you have to establish MJ first.
No, you don't. You just need to, we don't have to make her a redhead.
Well, okay.
A female hero who's new to the scene, trying to do the thing, runs up against Spider-Man.
She's the most unknown of them all that we've mentioned. I'm just saying. Like, she's literally...
You can keep her that way. You can keep her that way, and she still dies.
Yeah, well...
And it adds to the Spider-Man dogma, like, oh, no, my inaction led to somebody dying. Oh, I can't deal with it when... That kind of thing.
Yeah. Gail Simone must hate Spider-Man.
Really?
Well, you know, prison.
Dude, everyone hates Spider-Man. That's the whole shtick. Well, you write Spider-Man like you hate him.
No, everybody hates Peter Parker.
People love
Spider-Man. You like?
Yeah, people love Spider-Man.
Yeah,
well,
that's
except
true,
for
yeah.
J. Jonah. Except for Jonah.
Jonah just hates everybody.
No,
he especially hates
Spider-Man.
No, he hasn't made up his mind yet because he waffles.
Depends on what he does. Anyways.
Waffles!
So, Black Cat movie. There you go. Make it happen. Cast the actress who looks who can carry herself in her own presence and not teach everybody. I know that shouldn't be too hard to find. I'm not being serious about that. Okay, so moving on to our last topic. That is the topic. Woohoo! News is over.
Hey.
Let us know what you think. Who you think? Who would you want leading the female Spider-Man or a female centered whatever? You know what I mean. So let's move on to individual reviews, and from one female to another, I'm reviewing the sensational She-Hulk.
Are you speaking as a female here?
No, I can't speak for female.
Sorry, actually, I don't mean to intrude, but yeah. It turns out she was not, in fact, a vigilante in Marvel Universe, but she was Firestar in the Ultimate Universe. So there.
I knew you. Well, yeah.
What?
She hated mutants. She had a
Liz Allen phobia. Was Firestar in the Ultimate Comics.
I remember that. Yeah, it's ironic because, like, in the first half of the book, she's like, ugh, mutants are disgusting.
Yeah, she's a quote-unquote former mutant. She hates all mutants and whatnot, and it's just really depressing.
So wait a second. I'm guessing she was a mutant, and now she's not a mutant anymore?
No, she actually became a mutant again, so...
What?
Yeah. Oh, really?
Well, yeah, she as recently as the whole thing with Kitty Pryde leading the X-Men Underground, she was part of their little group.
That's weird. Yeah. If you start, like, it's funny, if you, like, look at the Ultimate Universe and where it started and where it's at now, it's like, how the fuck did we get here?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I don't want to read all... It starts with Galactus invading the Ultimate Universe.
No, even before that, like, I kind of want to read the entire Ultimate Universe, just, like, just get all that and read it, and, like, how the fuck did... Oh, that's how. Okay. Ultimatum's to blame. Lovely. All right. So I'm going to review Sensational She-Hulk number 7. I know it's not called Sensational She-Hulk, but I'm calling it that because I like adjectives in my titles. Okay? So,
weirdo.
Shut up. This issue basically is another one-shot issue with this this by coming by this unknown guy whose name I can't remember to basically help find his partner because he wants to patent off his Shrinko, which basically doesn't work on humans, but will allow to shrink objects to Tina form, and he's going to sell it to a current buyer. So what does Jen naturally do whenever you have a shrinking problem? Who do you call? Well, everybody's favorite
Ghostbusters.
Not them. They're, well, Egon's dead, so you can't call him anymore.
Don't tell JB that.
That was funny, by the way. But apparently called Giant Man, Hank Pym, and of course Hank Pym screamingly while trying to rescue. No, he's placing those windmills on boats. No, not on boats. No, they're on boats. They're whatever on the water. I guess he's placing giant those ecological windmills on the boats. So basically, this man, this guy's partner, his name is Rufus, has found himself lost in the backyard. So basically, think, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids too. And so, Patsy Hellcat, She-Hulk, and Hank Pym are now on the yard down to tiny in size, where basically, as Hank Pym put it, death is inevitable. Stay away from everything. Which, of course, the first thing that happens is Hank Pym gets swooped up by a bird to be eaten away. And he's like, "Welp." And so, which leads, unfortunately, Jennifer and Patsy to figure out a way how to find this guy. Patsy gets the bright idea of using the Ant-Man helmet. And she manages to summon the ants, and she sums up talking to the ants by this: it's like talking to a million 4-year-olds. All they want is sugar. They won't listen, which I find funny. Which leads to a mini fight of Patsy Walker and of Hellcat and She-Hulk fighting. She-Hulk realizes the situation is all but over with, so she, using her great tremendous leaping abilities, jumps on top of a barbecue grill. Patsy thinks that gets on She-Hulk's case because she thinks, "You don't think I'm good enough to do this. You think I'm a fuckhead. Blah, 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 blah. You think I'm going to screw things up." Which leads Patsy to go on her own. She-Hulk thinks he has found the guy in a soda can that's being surrounded by three gigantic cats. Leads to She-Hulk trying to throw the plan into action. Patsy's still upset about, you really don't trust me. And Jen's just like, "I'm just trying to do this, okay? I'm just trying to save this guy before the thing blows up. Oh, by the way, if they don't rescue him by a certain point in time, he blows up. And it's not a small explosion, it's a big one. And he's also in a crowded neighborhood. And it's also the yard's right next to a crowded neighborhood." So being the genius that she is, Hellcat uses the helmet to... I guess summon some more ants, because it kind of doesn't work. Or I guess she calls back. It looks like, depending on how the panel's laid out, she calls the bird back, because nothing ever, or she scared the cats. No, she doesn't. It's not clear why that panel's weird. Okay. So they defeat the cats, and they run off scaring. They find the guy, and in a great bit of comedy. And it turns out this guy is mad because Hank Pym was going to be the one to buy their shrinking technology. He said it's not too dangerous. And it kind of it's too dangerous, it's untechnologic, like I can help you go through with it, all this and all that. And so then they realizes that Patsy realizes that her part of his hand's missing and that it got sliced off in the soda can. And she goes, Where's the finger? I was like, oh, it gets back in the can. And then Jennifer just quickly runs and and like the guy's like, it's not gonna blow up, okay? It's not gonna the can explosion. Never mind then. I'll shut up. And of course business is settled, yada yada yada. But last page, it turns out old Captain America, Steve Rogers, has come back, or not come back, is looking for some legal aid. So there you go, another fun issue. I didn't like the last two issues, but this one was brought back the artist who was the main artist before, and I loved it again. Humorous writing, humorous art, I love it all around. 4 out of 5 She-Hulk. I love this book. The more I read it. More inept Patsy Walker, please, because it's just, it's hilarious. Anyways, apparently Brian, you're gonna go with something, right?
Yeah. I told you before we started what I was doing.
Derp.
I'll wait for you to recall what it is.
Superior Foes of Spider-Man.
Superior Spider-Man number 32.
I was close.
You were. I'll give you that one. Yeah. Beginning the Edge of Spider-Verse events. That kicks off here. So, first thing you should know, for any of you listening at home who read Superior Spider-Man, this story actually takes place during Superior Spider-Man number 19, wherein there was a quote-unquote temporal implosion at Horizon Labs, where Peter Parker worked at the time, and of course he was being possessed by Otto Octavius. So Spock, in this particular case, was hurtled forward into 2099. This whole event takes place within, I believe it was 24 hours, I believe. Yes, he was gone for 24 hours, and this is what happened in those 24 hours. Just, it's not going to bounce. Just, please, will you let me? Okay?
Jeez. Okay.
Fine. God. So, Spock is in 2099 at this point, and he's sort of bewildered at what's happened. He is immediately pursued by authorities from 2099, who are shocked when he actually fights back against them and, in fact, kicks their ass and wrecks their ride. And they're like, holy shit, fall back, retreat, wait. And the cop who picks up his fallen friend goes, man, Spider-Man usually never fights back. Well, what's up? What's with this guy? Or actually, in the super hip 2099 parlance of the day, he says, who the shock is this guy? Yeah. So, Spider-Man is picked up by Gabriel O'Hara, brother to Miguel O'Hara, who is the Spider-Man of 2099. And at first, he thinks he's Peter Parker back from the day. And Spock is disturbed by this because he got rid of Peter Parker. Why would he even remember him? So, Gabriel informs Peter that his brother, Miguel, who he affectionately calls Miggy, is missing. And he allows Spock to lay low in Miguel's apartment for the time being. Now, of course, Spock blows him off and is a huge asshole to Gabriel and whatnot. And he immediately begins devising a way to return home to his actual time. So, like any good Spider-Man, he resolves to rob Alchem next, because turns out they have time travel technology, which they bought from Stark/Fukujima, which I guess is the 2099 version of Tony Stark's company. And actually, it's a really funny little bit that plays out. He hits them first because they were the ones who originated the tech. But when he gets there, he says, disappointing, your company is actually abiding by the law. Slim pickings indeed. And he runs away. Then he robs Alchemex and Mr. Stone and whatnot. And he actually gets away with it for the most part. And he begins compiling a time machine to take him out of there. And interesting thing, in the time he's spent putting together this little time machine, his virtual assistant, a little hologram type thing. He's made it to look like his midget girlfriend back home, which I think is just so heartwarming. It's a little creepy. So, with his time machine set to rock and roll, he hurls himself back to the past, or wherever it was when he showed up. And when he gets there, he realizes that something is not right, or there have been complications. Mainly because the area he arrives in is just flaming wreckage and there's nothing really left. He investigates and finds the dead bodies of Reed Richards, the Human Torch, and the Thing. They're all dead. And I like Otto, too. He says, "I always knew Richards' arrogance would be his downfall, but anything that could slay them is of concern." So he begins investigating more, and off to the side, he sees Spider-Man's dead body. And he goes and he takes a look. Turns out this ain't Spider-Man that we know. In fact, this is the Spider-Man from the very first What If, where he joined the Fantastic Four and they became the Fantastic Five.
Wait,
and Spider-Man,
what?
Yeah. Spider-Man of Fantastic Five is dead, ladies and gentlemen. He is straight dead. So, now, dead. Yeah. What's funny, though, is that initially, Spock doesn't care about any of this. He's like, "Well, all this means is that my time machine doesn't work right, and I got the time wrong. Time to go back and try again." Goes back, tries again. Three more times he does this, and every single time he's thrown into a parallel world where that version of Spider-Man is dead. These include House of M, a world where Tony Stark won the registration war in Civil War, and a black and silver armored Spider-Man. Yeah, and that was actually Iron Spider-Man who died. He's still wearing the Tony Stark armor. Yeah. And the black and silver armored robot-looking Spider-Man of the future, I guess.
Did you find what universe that was?
No. It's bugging the crap out of me. So, Otto realizes that, hey, something's going on here. But the truth is, he's only concerned, or so he says, because someone else has the ability now to traverse dimensions and time, which he cannot allow to happen.
Can I guess who it is?
What?
Can I guess who it is?
Well, not yet, buddy. Hang on just one second, okay?
Aww.
So, he has no interest in fighting someone else's battle, but he begins to realize that whoever has this amount of power could prove to be a threat. And in fact, he quite likes the weapon that's killed every single Spider-Man thus far, as it's the same weapon. So, he resolves to make one more jump, and
his
if he ends
fist.
Up... What?
His bare fist?
Nope, it's a redhead.
He resolves to make one more jump and then find out what's going on. So he jumps, and we cut to Spider-Man in India. I believe his name is Pavitr Prabhakar. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. God knows I'm probably
Is that a
not.
Play on Peter Parker?
Yeah, it's an Indian variant, I'm guessing.
Okay, because I
Thank
was like...
Thank you, come again!
When did Apu join the episode?
Oh, Jesus. Pavitr, whatever the hell his name is, okay, Indie Spider-Man, as he will henceforth be known, is in the middle of duking it out with the man assassinating every Spider-Man at this point. So, Ben, you wanted to guess who it was, so why don't you go ahead and guess who it was that's been killing every Spider-Man?
Does it begin with an M?
Does it begin with an M? Not that I'm aware of, no.
It's not Moreland?
I don't think so, no.
Oh, God damn it. Whatever. Fuck off.
Does it begin with a K?
Begin with a K. You know, it's funny.
Wait,
I don't actually know the character's name.
I was thinking Kang.
No
he's too busy with Uncanny.
Honestly, I would take a gamble
Why
and
would
say
would Kang it's... fuck with Spider-Man?
Because he can.
But it's Spider-Man. Yeah. He's a
Well, he has
Kang.
Bigger fish to fry at the moment over in,
Uncanny.
You know.
It could be a different Kang.
That's there true.
But the it's first still, time it's Kang the Conqueror. I mean, he would
it
go
was
out.
Kang he the Conqueror.
He wouldn't. I'm just saying, a caliber of no matter what variation wouldn't go after Spider-Man. Unless Spider-Man did something extremely stupid, oh my God, it could happen.
Thank you. I love it when they realize.
So, yeah, I actually don't know who this guy is that's killing everybody. So
what's his name?
They never say his name.
What does he look like?
He's in this ridiculous-looking steampunk outfit with an old diver's helmet on his head.
It's a Big Daddy. It's a Big Daddy.
It's a Mysterio.
It's a Big Daddy.
Steampunk Mysterio.
It's a Big Daddy. Bioshock confirmed.
I don't want both counts, but thinking, guys.
It's a Big Daddy.
I honestly think it might be a new character. I'm not entirely certain. We'll have to turf this one to Arnold next time he's kicking around somewhere, see if he doesn't know something. But
he might be behind a bit, because I was with him yesterday. We were watching True Blood, and he told me, I think he's like 2 months behind. So he might not have even read that
yet. Seriously? Yeah, Arnold, seriously. You suck! What are you doing? God damn it, Arnold!
Well, you know, dude, he just came back from Connie. You know, he had to save up money from that, so... He's got to flip out of the website.
Don't come to me with your problems, okay? I don't need to hear that shit, okay? So, where was I? Oh, yeah.
Uncle Ben. Cross-time Uncle Ben.
In Spider-Man India, it is Uncle Bim. Thank you very much.
Bim, bim, salabim. Let me stop.
Bim, bim, salabim. Yeah, you're going to want to cut back on that. So,
what is
yeah.
that from?
That's from Family
Johnny
Guy.
Quest.
There you go.
It's.
Indy Spider-Man's getting his ass kicked, and he's about to die for saving the lives of civilians, which just goes through how foolish that is an endeavor. I mean, really, if you're going to save civilians and not save yourself, what's even the point, at least according to Spock? Speaking of Spock, he intervenes, drop kicks the dude, and bolts out of there with Indian Spider-Man in tow. And pretty much at this point, Spock has resolved, okay, look, this guy's obviously a problem, so I'm going to put together an army of Spider-Men, and we're all going to fight this guy together. And you know, Indy Spider-Man's like, whoa, that's awesome. I am so ready to battle, and thank you so much for saving me. I'm so happy to be the first part of this huge super army you're putting together. And Spock replies, who said you were the first? And their location shows a collection of Spider-Men already assembled, ready to battle with Spock and Pod-Eater. These Spider-Men include Spider-Man from Spider-Man Noir, Spider-Monkey from Marvel Apes, Ashley Barton from Old Man Logan, Spider-Man with eight arms, or eight limbs, as it were, the freakishly mutated one. And last, but certainly not least, and one who I actually... Who is slurping their drink while I'm reviewing this shit?
That's me. I'm sorry, I actually had a Slurpee.
Bastard!
Sorry.
Anyway, last but certainly not least, Spider-Man who I thought most people had forgotten completely about, Spider-Man from a What If issue, Spider-Man versus Wolverine. And that is probably my favorite Spider-Man. He's serious the fuck up in that book.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact... The backup feature is about his recruitment, him and Logan fighting this dude. And let me tell you, Logan gets fucking fried by this dude. He's just an adamantium skeleton when he's tossed away, hanging off this dude's weapon. It is bad. So, Spider-Man of this universe is fighting this guy, and his girlfriend Alex, who's like this Black Ops chick, busts in, and being the good boyfriend that he is, he just knocks her out with a condensed spider web ball or whatever and knocks her out and removes her from the fight pretty much so that the guy will focus on him and not try to kill her. And in doing so, he lures the man into a trap wherein his scepter or his staff or whatever it is conducts enough electricity that were he any regular man, it should kill him. But, of course, it doesn't. You know, he kind of goes on with his wicked ways and whatnot. So, it looks like he's about to die, even though this Peter Parker just put up one hell of a fight. And I think this is going to be a recurring thing because near the end, Spock kind of shows up and is like, hey, I'm here to whisk you away to join my super awesome army. And Peter Parker's like, yeah, okay, sign me up, good. And they just jump out of there. So it's starting to look like this whole recruitment back issue thing is going to start being a regular thing throughout these issues. I will say, though, that I love the back issue because it was illustrated by Adam Kubert, and it was in fact written by Christos Gage, who I have a soft spot for, and it was a really well done issue. Because I like that Spider-Man too. I didn't think anybody else remembered that Spider-Man, but apparently most people did, which surprises me. So I'm happy to see him back in Spock's little spider army. We'll see how that works out. Dan Slott and Christos Gage both kind of did this issue up. I think Christos Gage gets credit for the main issue as well. And, oh my God. Forgive me, please. Pencils by Giuseppe Comancoli?
Giuseppe Comancoli. He's a brother of Mario.
He's a brother of Mario, brother.
I apologize to all in any of Italian.
Luigi Tessier.
I slaughtered that name. I am so goddamn
Giuseppe Comancoli.
Giuseppe Comancoli.
Comancoli. Comancoli.
So basically John Comancoli, because isn't that what Giuseppe is? And you know,
I don't know what Giuseppe means.
Giuseppe is, I think, John.
I don't know any Italians. I don't know.
Well, whatever it is, I enjoyed the art nonetheless, especially considering this guy had to draw so many death scenes, and it's a little sad.
Before you finish, quick question. Did they use the Spider-Man from the What If Mary Jane Had Died Civil War issue?
They have not shown that Spider-Man.
Spider-Man was a beast.
There was no big splash page of, you know, all these Spider-Men yet.
Okay.
I know the one you're talking about, and if there's any justice, he will show up and just bring a whole new level of darkness to this thing.
I love that. Ben, you've read that one, right?
Read what?
What if Civil War, where instead of Aunt May catching the bullet, it was Mary Jane who died?
What if Civil War?
It was one of them, but this one's Spider-Man specific.
I only read What If Civil War and Spider-Man dies.
Maybe
in
it was What If. No. I really can't remember, but it was a.
It was probably bunch. What If One More Day, and I never read that.
Yeah,
because in What If Civil War, Spider-Man dies.
He finds out that the Kingpin did it, and he suits up in his black suit, and he goes off, and he just straight up murders the Kingpin, rips his heart out.
But what was awesome was after that, he ends up hooking up with Black Widow. And Fury, and I've mentioned this before, they trained him how to use his spider sense, and he'd like, you know, the thing he does that with the martial arts that Iron Fist, you know, him incorporating his spider sense into his physical abilities, the stuff that they had him do made Spider-Man easily A-list. It was fucking scary.
Yeah. Not unlike the Spider-Man they showed in this one, whose spider sense, I think they said bordered on precognition, and if that
that's exactly what they had to do.
He bested Black Widow on multiple occasions and just straight up kicked ass. And in fact, one of my favorite ones from the What If issue of the Spider-Man they featured in the backup was one where he's fighting this super skilled assassin guy, and at first he just shoots a web at him. And he tears the web up with his scythe-like weapon, and he's just like, okay. And the web shooter, he pulls the trigger and blows the dude's brains out. Just no hesitation in Spider-Man. Oh, my God. It's just he makes the hand gesture, and poof, gone. It was excellent. But, yeah, so needless to say, I am excited for this. For no small reason, the amount of Spider-Men they are recruiting for this. I mean, they could have gone with Peter Parker.
It's every Spider-Man in existence.
Well, except for the ones that are already dead. You know,
well, of course, but it's every Spider-Man.
No Fantastic Five, no House of M, no Civil War.
Did they use Demo Spider from Spider Goblin from Infinity Crusade?
Not that I'm aware of. Spider-Man that I've mentioned are the only ones that were shown in this issue. They haven't shown
Spider-Verse isn't start till November, so...
Yeah, they're going to be building up.
I'm just wondering, you know.
But I'm actually surprised he bothered to pick up Ashley Barton from Old Man Logan, because that actually was fucking... That had me rolling on the ground, because I'm like, oh yeah, Spock would like her.
She killed Luke Cage with a shotgun to the face, and not by the bullets, either.
Huh?
Huh?
Yeah, she straight up took her head off with a shotgun.
Are we talking about Old Man Logan?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Old Man Logan.
Yeah, in that story, the Spider-Man.
No, he said she killed Luke Cage.
Yeah, that's what I said.
She didn't kill Luke Cage.
Yes, she did.
Remember she killed the Kingpin.
No, which was Luke Cage.
No.
Yes.
No. Are you saying that because
he was a black guy with sunglasses? Was
Are you saying that because he's black?
I was assumed it was Luke Cage.
Oh my!
And he just assumed the identity.
Casual racism by Eagle.
I'm just saying, like I always thought it was him. I mean, it was a Marvel centric.
You saw a black guy, you thought, oh, Luke Cage. Okay.
No, the guy in that issue.
It was a Marvel centric story. Who else am I going to think it was?
He was a new creation. In fact, he was a parody of those blinged out rappers.
Which is why it's Luke Cage.
Luke Cage is not a parody of anything. Okay?
Yeah, for a while he was. They actually made it. Brian Azzarello made him like that for a little bit. The point is, I'm pretty sure it was Luke Cage.
It wasn't Luke Cage.
He just called himself the Kingpin. Shit got real, okay?
God, just.
I'm guessing he didn't have his powers.
Probably. Okay, you know what? Never mind. Now think about it. If it was Luke Cage, he wouldn't have taken off his head like that.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Okay, so it was just generic black guy number two. Okay.
She beat his head. She took his head off with a steel pipe. And
was it a steel pipe or I thought it was a shotgun?
I thought it was a steel drum. Bing, bing, bing,
bing, bing, bing, bing, bing, bing, bing, bing. Point is, this chick straight up took a kingdom from a dude in a universe run by mostly villains. So,
yeah.
Holla!
Yeah, wasn't
considering she is the biracial daughter of Hawkeye, and in fact, from Peter Parker's daughter, which says some really creepy things about what Hawkeye was up
to. They need to do an Old Man Logan 2 or something.
They do. They were tossing around ideas, but I don't think anything ever came of it.
Mason, yeah, because Millar is making that killer. Kick-ass money. That's why he doesn't need to do Old Man Logan anymore.
Well, not only that, but he didn't keep that book on time for shit. Old Man
Logan. Well, that was – who gives a shit? Who gives a shit about that as long as it comes out?
Okay.
Hey, it doesn't matter when the book is eventually out and you read it all in one sitting. That's all I'll say that. Anyways, we all love it. Let's move on to Taser, who fittingly goes to Kick-Ass number 3.
Great.
Well, Kick-Ass number 3, Kick-Ass 3 number 8, whatever.
Oh, you
Kick-Ass 3 number 8, exactly. Well, I mean, it's the last issue. It's the last series for Kick-Ass, and it's
really? They're not continuing it? Huh.
I think Romita's going to do a Hit Girl series.
Oh, okay.
And I just preface this by saying, Taser, I am so excited to hear what you have to say about the ending of this issue, like the real ending of this issue.
Like that.
Okay, so go ahead and you talk. You tell it.
Well, basically, this is a pretty straightforward issue. Kick-Ass and Hit-Girl, you know, she finally gets freed after having been pseudo-betrayed by the motherfucker. but he, in turn, ends up setting her free. So, you know, because he tries to redeem himself, but he ends up dying from wounds he suffered during the escape. And blah, blah, blah. She hooks up with Kick-Ass and, you know, they reveal that, oh, no, you know, they've been wiping out, Don Gigante? No, the Genevieve family has been eliminating the costume heroes who were out trying to do good. And Todd, you know, one of Kick-Ass's friends has been taken. So, yeah, Kick-Ass has to go get him. And Hit-Girl, of course, wants to eliminate anybody and everything related to the Genovese family because you fuckers put me in jail, for, you know, lack of a better term. And it kept her there because, you know, they had bought people on the inside and what have you. So this is basically them moving out to their own individual goals. Kick-Ass, he, you know, finds where Todd's being held, and rather than, you know, go in and, you know, simply getting him out, he goes for the whole stage acting thing, you know, lessons learned from Big Daddy. So he actually has to make this whole big production bit before he can get in there and do the whole rescue thing. And there's a bit of a fight, but, you know, he comes through and he's kicked their ass and he's freeing Todd. And, you know, as he's getting all exalted and whatever, come to find out, oh, there were other guys downstairs. It's like 5 of them. So these guys, you know, they break in and they come up on Kick-Ass and they, you know, stomp him stupid. And he's like all turtled and huddled up on the floor. And you know, kick ass kind of going over things in his head, like, oh my God, what did I, why did I have to do this? This isn't fun anymore. You know, when I was there getting all dressed up, and it's a whole big monologue thing in his head until he realizes, you know, one of the reasons why he did become a hero is because he liked that, you know, they taught you life lesson, taught you how to overcome your circumstances. And amongst this, amongst the ass stompings,
yeah, have superpowers and have a hot girlfriend.
Well, he actually has a girlfriend.
Okay, so
he's been having good monkey sex.
Never mind. I'm just saying. Like, yeah. I'm sorry. I always love it that like superheroes are great. Like, yeah, have a 6-pack ab, get a hot girl, all your problems solved.
Well, no, well, that didn't happen for him because he stayed looking like a geek. And
I know. I'm just saying the general message in superheroes.
Right. Fair enough.
I'm sorry, my hipster nerd came on right now.
Yeah, fix your glasses, Ben.
Yeah, right. So
I really gotta fix them though.
He takes and he notices that they were in the warehouse for like, you know, some alcohol, and you know, his break-in and, you know, the ensuing fights, there's a lot of alcohol floating about on the floor, and there's this wire that's, you know, dangling down, and he puts two and two together, which, you know, we're talking extrapolation, and, you know, you just kind of have to roll with it. He tells Todd to, you know, reach for the sky, and Todd figures it out, and he swings up, and he grabs the wire, slams it into the floor. The alcohol electrifies everything and takes out the four guys and saves their asses, essentially, because these guys had it in for him. They were beating him with his own sticks, you know, and he wasn't walking out of that. Hit Girl, on the other hand, she went to where the Genesis family were converging because that kid, I think his real name was Chris, whatever.
Chris Genovese.
Thank you. Chris Genovese was supposed to deliver her to great-grandfather, whatever the fuck he was, and he had invited the big-time mobsters from all up and down the East Coast in order to solidify everything into, like, one big super gang, his words. And he also wasn't giving them any choice in the matter, because if these guys wanted to walk, he said, you know, I've stolen like your firstborn or your firstborn grandchild or whatever, and, you know, they'll be returned to you upon you agreeing to my terms. And if not, well, you can have them, and, you know, they won't be breathing anymore. So he's also got this casket made up, and it's got her name on it, and he's got this golden pickaxe for such a ceremonial occasion, and you know, he's just waiting, doing the Mr. Burns, yes, excellent. But we're talking Hit Girl, so of course shit does not go right for him. And from her making her landing to her encountering Dom Genovese, it's just nothing but her slaying people left and right. Glorious, glorious violence. You know, there's no reason for me to even go into any discussion, because there's no need for it. She just shot everybody. Everybody got what was coming to them, you know, except for Don Genovese, because she didn't shoot him. What she did do was she buried that pickaxe right in his forehead. You know, bye-bye, Genovese. So she decides that she needs to bounce out of there, and she comes across that crooked cop who I think he shows up first in Volume 2, but either way, his name was Gigante, and he's got all of his crooked criminals, which, you know, is kind of like, you know, all nice and neat. You know, all the bad cops were here because somebody put in a call that something was going to happen. So he rounded up all the guys who were on the take, and they, you know, were just waiting for Hit Girl to leave so that they can, you know, take her in and you know, do whatever. And she, you know, puts her hands up, and, you know, they go into some bullshit talk, you know, about there's nothing you can do. You know, my guys will have a field day with you. We have more guns than you have, blah, blah, blah. And you know, she basically drops a dime on that. Yeah, you have all those weapons, but I still got your asses. You guys are dead in a few seconds. And, you know, he's confused, like, you know, what are you talking about? He's like, well, it's just me and my detonator. You guys really need to pay attention to where you park. In the beginning of the book, we had seen that there were, like, these little small flashing things buried in the ground, which, you know, it doesn't take, you know, the freaking genius to figure out what they were, but she saved those things for this moment for those guys because she reveals that she's the one that had called the cops. Click! Boom! Every single one of them blown to smithereens. And it's just him and her. And I quote, now I might be tired and I might be wounded, and it really has been a long and bloody night. Ball Destructor, she punches him dead in the sack.
I curled up when I read that panel. I curled up where I was sitting.
She punched him dead on. She had to go through his penis to hit his sack. Okay? This image is so impressive. This image was like when Luke Cage punted Elektra, or ended up being the Skrull impersonator. Yeah. This is that kind of image. You know, this was, it was glorious.
Oh, God, what was that movie where you just, he hits, oh, God, what was that fighting movie where the dude punches him a bunch of times in the gut and his, like, insides explode?
Like Story that. Of Riccio?
I think that might be it, yeah.
Mortal Kombat?
Sure.
No. Mortal Kombat wasn't bloody.
Well, I was saying just idea of Mortal Kombat. It sounds like
something. Oh, okay, right. Thing. No, fair enough. I understand. And so, yeah, she punches him dead in his sack through his dick. And then she's not going to kill him because she's still got one last use for him. And she uses him to basically drop dime and bust every other, like, little straggler about what's been going on in regards to the Genovese family and organized crime and everything else. In doing so, it sets her stepfather, sets him free. All the other, you know, little guys that were in on the gag that weren't there, they get rounded up, you know. And it frees her because she doesn't go back home. You know, she decides that, you know, there are other things out there, people that need to get taken care of, and her mother's a target, even though that cop was named Marcus, yeah, he's there to take care of her, she'll be a target, you know, because she's her daughter's hit girl. So she decides that, oh, I think I'll head over to, like, Ireland, you know, the Middle East, you know, some of them hot spots, you know, with people who have problems that, you know, yeah, they need to not be breathing anymore. And that's basically what she does. Every so often after that, she sends flowers to her mother on Mother's Day. There's flowers on her old man's grave, and there's flowers for her mother inside the home. But, you know, that's pretty much it. The mother ends up making friends with Chris Genovese's mom. You know, they become pals. And that's really it. Now, Kick-Ass. Kick-Ass rescues Todd, gets him to the hospital, where his girlfriend works because she's an ER nurse and she's, you know, got one ear, she's deaf. And he promptly tells her that, well, I'm done, you know. And she was worried that, you know, he couldn't give up the life because it's so exciting. And she can't live like this, you know, because it's not fair. And she doesn't want to take and hold him back from what he does. So she's going to really miss him. And he's like, no, you don't understand. I'm done. That was it. That was the last ride. And you know, she's
got
all
my high.
Exactly. And
why doesn't Batman do this?
Because his life is the mission. The mission is his life. That's not the case for him. Kick-Ass realized that pussy is better. All right.
Look, do I want to get punched in the face? I don't know.
But I like what they did with Kick-Ass. You know, he decides that, yeah, he's had enough. And
he had to have had
he'd
enough.
Rather be happier with
his girlfriend?
Valerie. Thank you. Yeah, with a girlfriend who's also a fangirl. You know,
oh,
she's in
cool.
toys and stuff
that's
like cool. that, in the movies. I mean, he met his perfect partner for all intents and purposes. And, you know, they decide to have a life together. But he hasn't given up on the ideals of being, of doing good and, you know, doing something for society.
Mm-hmm.
Kick-Ass becomes a cop.
Ah.
I like that. You know, he goes from behind the cowl to behind the shield. And it's just... it's just so well done, and it's totally believable. I totally buy that. He even, in the last couple of panels, he's kind of grown some, so it looks like he finally hit a growth spurt, because he was pretty much a dweeb, you know, during most of
the time. He was a pretty lanky kid all throughout, you know.
Exactly. And, you know, they hit the movies, and he takes, like, unfortunate like kids, like cripples and what have you, and he takes them to the movies, you know, and shows them a good time. But it's funny because at the movie theater, you know, the movies that he's seeing, we're talking movies with the titles Jupiter's Legacy,
Super Crooks, Superior.
Superior 5 was the movie they went
and
to.
And actually, he references superheroes existing.
Exactly.
Kick-Ass's world that are his own work, like MGH, I think, was one, or whatever it's called, MHP,
MPH.
MPH, thank you.
Miles per hour.
Whatever.
Yeah. Okay, see, now that, yeah, see, I didn't get that because I didn't read MPH, but he mentions those guys breaking the sound barrier or that lunatic killing cops in Japan. And even
which is Nemesis.
That's pretty cool. That's, that, I think if you're a fan of his work and if you haven't, I think that's one of those, oh, that's kind of cool.
So what's this wave of celebrity kidnappings? Wasn't that Nemesis 2 or something?
No. Nemesis was this guy killing cops in Japan. The kidnapping one was Secret Service, the ones with all the...
Which is getting made into a movie.
Yeah, it was Secret Service.
Wow. It's who?
Secret Service.
I didn't read it. So, fair enough.
Dave Gibbons did the art for that
one.
Well,
that movie centered around... I know it centered... I didn't read all of it. It centered around celebrities in some fashion because the opening issue had Mark Hamill.
Mark Hamill in it, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's not Is that Mark? No, it's Mark Hamill.
That's funny.
So that's what that is.
Well, that's basically where it ends, you know? And panel is Kick-Ass reminded people why we need heroes, but something tells me the best is yet to come. And we come full circle to the beginning. Remember the very beginning of Kick-Ass is a guy in a building, mm-hmm. and he's got the bird costume, and he jumps off, and he, you know, flies down, and unfortunately he just lands on top of the freaking cab, you know, and he dies. Well, no, this guy's got it figured out. He's got the bird costume, and he jumps out. And he, you know, comes down and people look up and they point and they stare and the guy goes wings to manual and he pulls out of the dive, you know, and people just standing there and they're like, wow.
And he takes flight and it's awesome.
Yeah.
You know, that,
and
you know
the
that
exact
reminds
same
me of?
Monologue from the opening panels too, which
exactly.
I love.
You know that
yeah.
reminds me of
it
that
comes full circle.
That scene. It seems like that's like a Superman ending where it's like the Christopher Reeve movie where like he flies into the sunset. Or flies
okay,
into
the yeah, set. Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
I feel like I want to read this. I read Kick-Ass 1, I didn't read Kick-Ass 2, and I didn't read Kick-Ass 3.
I would say read the last three, because the last three, they tie everything off.
Well, I want to read all of it, since it seems like to be like a cohesive thing, so I want to read
all of it. Well, yeah, you could definitely do that. So if anything, when it comes out in trade, if you get all three and you can read them, straight.
I own the first one. I just don't own the second one, and the third one will be coming out.
And, yeah, I would recommend that. This was actually a good end for a character. You know, it wasn't tragic. It was it's like he matured, you know, and there's no regrets from him
on you know, on anything that he did. You know, he was like, "Yes, I did this, and I'm completely happy."
Give him the epilogue.
No! Don't! No!
Well, what I thought was funny was they do Kick-Ass, and then they do the characters, and they do the characters like Dave Lazuski as Kick-Ass, Damon McCready as Big Daddy, and like his two friends Todd and Marty as the Ass Kicking Battle Guy, Christian Ovies as the motherfucker, and then they do Colonel Stars and Justice Forever. They do the dog Eisenhower, which is like, jeez, they went there. And Minnie McCready is a hit girl. But then there's this other bit with Paul McQuaid's diary. And I don't want to ruin it, but that's actually a pretty funny thing because, it looks like hit girl likes partners. And she's kind of picked up on somebody needing, you know, some kind of support, and she's got just the character that he should be. So I thought that was actually pretty funny.
That was a good. I really loved that scene because then the way that the journal entry was written was so like new agey and like super like, you know, helicopter parenting and like my therapist says I'm this and was it?
I was like, where has this Mark Millar been?
Well, this is Kick-Ass, you know. It's one that's dear to his heart. So,
yeah, I mean, it's cool. So, I hope eventually he gets the rights back. I mean, he does have it, but like where he owns it fully, he doesn't. I don't know if he owes Marvel anything just because it's technically under that banner. I hope he gets like. What I would like is like
he probably has controlling interest.
I'm pretty sure he does, but like he does. I don't think he owns 100% because it's, you know, I doubt he does.
Why wouldn't he like share ownership with Ramita? Because Ramita.
Well, no, I mean not just for Ramita, but like I'm pretty sure like Marvel has some kind of a stake in it. Like stake.
Well, yeah, because they own Icon, the publishing company they run through.
So I'm hoping like the contract runs out and him and Ramita get the rights back and they republish it at Image, and like it's a big big hardcover for all three. Like all. Let's see.
Yeah, if that's all they're gonna do, then they could just redo. They could just do that at Icon.
Yeah, but
they're just gonna republish it in one.
But I like looking at the Image logo because that's how vain I am. That's how vain.
Okay. Okay.
You're well, an anyway, asshole.
What you don't know is that Todd McFarlane has a gun pointing out of my head right now, and you can't see.
Wait a second. Isn't McFarlane Canadian?
What does that have to do with anything?
Yeah, him and Maverick, evil Canadians.
Oh,
but anyway, like I wanted to say, this was a good end to a good story. I mean, I think it was a good story because it was violent and over the top, and it had some sex. Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
it was funny, you know, and it was a semi believable example of what would happen if normal people decided to try to be, you know, heroes. And yeah, you see why shit like this, you really don't want to do that. But it was altogether, most importantly, it was fun. You know, it was fun and it was a good read. So, thank you, Mark Millar and John Romita Jr., JRJR. I give this a 4.5 Warriors out of 5. The only thing that would have made this a 5 is if we'd have gotten some boobies.
That could be the only thing that can make it better.
Boobs.
Make it hardcore. And, you know,
maybe in the extended cut. Anyways.
Woohoo! We'll never see a Kick-Ass 3, though.
On the Kick-Ass, we're going to see Kick-Ass.
What? Well, yeah, it did.
Oh, did it?
I don't. I
you know what? You know what? You know how to solve this? Kickstart that shit.
Okay, but you know what the problem is?
What?
Kick-Ass 2 went places that no movie, no person would really want to do an accurate
of movie
life. Yeah, so
did it?
Yes, it really did.
Okay,
and kind of not so much in 3, but you'd have to have this little girl in prison, and it would still be a bit. You know what I'm saying?
It's always weirder in real life because then you have to take that into account. Okay, well, regardless, we'll always have the Kick-Ass comics and that wonderful story arc.
Wonderful, bloody, violent story.
Well, I was going to say it's Romita's best work. I don't know. I haven't read all of it, but
I highly disagree with that. I think it's Daredevil was his best work.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
followed by his X-Men.
I never read his X-Men.
I would side with that theory. I mean, it's just an opinion anyway.
I never read his X-Men stuff, so I don't know. When did he do X-Men?
When Rachel Gray showed up.
So what, late 80s?
No, early. It was like, actually early. Yeah. During the Power Pack era.
Okay. Well, maybe there has to be a collection of that somewhere, or like back issues or something. I would love to check that out. So he was before Jim Lee, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, at least a good 5 years.
That's interesting. I don't think of Romita when I think of X-Men. I only think of like the other side of the universe.
Because
I only ever think of JRJR as Kick-Ass for whatever reason.
Really?
Not even Spider-Man?
No, not even. Just well, because I think that was the first
Iron Man, not so much. He wasn't JRJR when he was drawing Iron Man yet.
It's the first story of his that I ever read that he illustrated, so I think it kind of left an impact on me.
I'll say this about JRJR. JRJR didn't become JRJR that we know until Daredevil, until Man Without Fear. Like that look he has now that everybody knows him by, he didn't get that until then.
Okay.
Like if you look, go look at Demon in the Bottle, which is his earliest big work. You couldn't tell that's JRJR if you if nobody told you, just because of how normal it looks. So modern JRJR is Daredevil onward. But yeah. So there you go. Let us know if you love John Romita Jr.'s art now that he's working at the Distinguished Competition. Let us know what you thought of the ending of Kick-Ass 3, what you thought of She-Hulk, and what you thought of whatever Brian reviewed. I don't know, Superior Spider-Man, some shit.
Oh my god.
Thank you all, ladies and gentlemen, for listening. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes. Be sure to check us out on Facebook, courtesy of Taser. Be sure to follow us on Twitter. Be sure.
And A-Train.
Be sure.
And John too, actually.
And John.
Right, not so much because
I've offered Brian the position of being the Twitter handle person, but he doesn't want it.
I don't barely use my own Twitter. Why the hell would I want to do someone else's?
Business?
What business? We don't make any money off this.
Yeah, this is a labor of love.
Well, I'm sorry. I have to go dive in my money pit right now. I'm sorry. Bye-bye.
You've been holding out on us?
What you don't know is, guys, by the way, I'm leaving because Marvel's actually hired me to be their new official podcaster. Ha-ha. Brian, you're in charge. Lock the door when you're on your way out.
Do you know how many Crunch Berries we could have bought with that money?
Five? No! Not the Crunch Berries!
Anyways, be sure to check out gaming review website, marvelousiggy.wordpress.com, where you...
And Mr. Dragon! Yay!
Mr. Dragon, where you can listen to the second episode of the RPG show entitled...
Nobody likes Mr. Dragon!
I like him. He's my best friend.
You just don't like Mr. Dragon.
You just don't like him because we kicked you out. Be sure to listen to our second episode, Kentucky Fried Chocobo, where we talk about our favorite games that we like to where we talk about the replay value of games and what our favorite games to replay. Also, you can check out our first ever top 10 list, where we post our top 10 characters who we would like in Super Smash Bros. 4. And coming up this week, Dragon will have a review of Lumines, a PS Vita title, and I will be continuing the handheld theme as my review later this week will come out of Metroid Fusion. So there you go, what to expect for the RPG show gang over there. And you can follow that at Marvelous Iggy, at Marvelous Iggy. So until next week for episode number 176, everybody have a good week.
Later!
Tune in next week for a Casting Couch. Not the porn. Huh. We can't afford that. But I'm talking about the Inhumans, ladies and gentlemen.
We could be inhuman on the casting couch.
Oh! Creepy tentacle sea monster. Cloven hooves.
Sigma the sea monster.
Yeah. Cloven hooves and top head fins and tentacle hair. Yeah. Tentacle hair.
Yeah. Croft and Marty, Sigma the sea monster.
And dogs. Wait, no. Here's a little song I wrote. You might
might want to sing it note for note. Don't worry, be happy. In every life we have some trouble, but when you worry you make it double. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy now. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy.